Hey there, and thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren, and I'm joined today by Rachel Camp, a certified financial planner, a personal finance blogger, and the founder of Camp Wealth, a financial planning firm for high earners and business owners. Thanks for joining me, Rachel.
Thank you, Lauren. Excited to be here.
Our goal for today is to make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a big part of adulting. Today, Rachel, we're going to talk about financial independence and specifically balancing enjoying the present day while also aggressively saving for FI.
Sounds good. I'm excited.
So I got to start with like the obvious, what is FI?
Yeah, so FI, financial independence, has a lot of different names, financial freedom, work optional, things like that. But to me, it's the point, and I think most people would agree with this, but it's the point at which you are work optional. You don't have to go to a job and rely on income from a job anymore. So you built up assets in some ways, and there's lots of different ways to build up these assets, but you built up your own assets in a way that they actually can provide you income. You no longer have that requirement of having to go to a job anymore.
But Rachel, I like working.
So do I. And most people that I work with say that same thing. So it's really interesting because traditionally we have this retirement goal of around age 65. And that's what a lot of people are striving for. That's what we're told to work towards. And more, since I get to work with people all the time, I'm finding that financial independence, financial freedom is really important to people still, but they don't have traditional goals of retirement or this idea of retirement where I'm going to work for 40 years and then I want to retire and then I want to stop working and who knows what I'm going to do with my days. Instead, people, it's more of a mindset shift that I think a lot of people are after. They're thinking, well, yeah, I'd like to work and I'd like to build up these assets. But at some point, I would like to make that shift to awareness where I'm work optional and then maybe try something else, a different job, a side hustle, or take some time off, whatever it might be. It really has, you know, transformed into a different meaning, I think, with financial freedom. And I think that's why we talk about financial independence, financial freedom so much rather than the word retirement.
So I entered the workforce 11 years ago when I graduated college. And in that time, the first company I worked for, which was Toys R Us, by the way, doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
The second company I work for has sold. The third one has folded. This is a problem. Maybe I'm the problem.
But I was going to say, I don't want you to come work for my company then.
I know. I think I definitely took down Toys R Us. But my point is, just because you like working, you like your career, you like your current job, a lot of things can change. I mean, even your boss can change, your coworkers, the ownership of the business itself, all of these things can happen. So I think that's fine if you like working. But I was always of this mindset of, what if someday I don't?
That's a really good point, because I feel the same way. I love my job. I love what I talk about every day. I love getting to talk to people every day. But people change. I mean, we evolve. Our interests change. It's very rare for us to be interested in one thing for 30 to 40 years. And then there's just the security part of it. I mean, external things can happen, disabilities, you know, things with family members. And you really need to be setting yourself up all the way for future you. And a lot of the planning that I do is optimizing for flexibility, because most of us have no idea what we want to be doing in 30 years, let alone 5 or 10 years. So it's important when we create a financial plan, when we're planning for that future, I believe it's just to create as much flexibility within the plan as we can. And, you know, that can look like a lot of different things depending on how you're trying to get to financial freedom. But first and foremost, that is what that's what I do personally for myself. I want flexibility built into the way that I handle my finances. And then now I find that I do that for a lot of my clients as well, because they have the same thoughts that I do.
So this financial independence idea, we also hear FIRE. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that stands for financial independence, retire early. And the FIRE movement, I think it's kind of evolved. I don't even know exactly how to label it anymore, because I think when it first started out, it was a lot of people who were just aggressively saving and they were really frugal. And maybe it's wrong to say this, but I do think there was kind of a negative connotation around it, where they were staying, a lot of people were staying in high earning jobs that they hated, and their desire for early retirement was to get out of those jobs, get out of the workforce. And if they aggressively save and invested to try to get out of the workforce as soon as possible, well before the age of 65, I think now, because of that, the FIRE movement is starting to shift, and it's starting to evolve into kind of what we're talking about, where it's this financial freedom, this mindset of, well, now I'm work optional and I don't want to retire necessarily, but I want the ability to do something else. I want the options to do something else. So I think a lot of people have kind of dropped the RE side of that off, their retire early, because it's not... We were seeing so many people actually get to that point, retiring early and not being happy with their lives and being bored, wanting to go back to work. It didn't solve all of their problems. So to me, I believe it's evolved quite a bit to be more along the lines of what you and I are talking about today.
Yeah, it started, I think, in Silicon Valley, San Francisco. These people with 200,000 a year jobs, spending $25,000, living with 10 roommates or whatever, eating beans and ramen, and retiring with $600,000-$700,000. And the plan was, in perpetuity, for the rest of my life, I'm going to spend $25,000-$30,000. And mathematically, does that make a lot of sense? Sure. But in practice, your life changes. You change. What if you get married? What if you have a kid? What if you want to travel more? What if you want to drive a nicer car, live in a nicer place? What if, like you said, something happens to your parents or something happens to you and your health? I mean, there's a lot of things that can go down there. And so we've seen, like you said, this shift over time from earn and save as much as possible and then not work anymore at all to this kind of middle ground. And I've seen a lot of this online. How do we know what we should be spending money on versus not at this time? Like, how do we, if you're thinking about financial dependence and maybe even retiring early or becoming work optional, how do I know what balance means and what I should be spending money on? Like, let's say I love red wine, not a hypothetical. How do I like allow myself and be happy about, I want to buy not just a $5 bottle of wine. I want to buy a $15 bottle of wine because I really enjoy it. But how do I give myself like the permission to do that?
Yeah. And that's really the word, permission. And I think when it comes to this like mindset of wanting to retire earlier, wanting to hit financial freedom as soon as possible, there's a spectrum really. And a lot of people, when the FIRE movement first started, they were really on the far side of the spectrum where they were really aggressively saving. And it was all about delayed gratification. It was all about, I will enjoy my life in 10 to 15 years, but today I'm just working to get there. And yeah, it's I would never recommend that. And I think that there's a lot of people coming out speaking against that now, because that's no way to spend 10 or 15 years to be miserable at a job and to be planning your entire life for the future, to be delaying your happiness for the future. And for many of us, and there's pushback too against some of these things that we buy that other people might see as dumb, like lattes, like wine, like anything like that, that brings us kind of this daily happiness. And I hate that. You know, when people, that rhetoric around those small expenses being the reason that you can't achieve financial freedom, I just think it's completely wrong. And for me, the way that I like to look at it is to focus really on the big expenses, to always make sure like housing and food and transportation, you know, those huge expenses are well below my means. Not so well below my means, I'm living with like 10 roommates, but well below my means to where I'm really comfortable. And then I can splurge on, you know, the things that I like daily. Like I bought a matcha latte today, and that's important to me. There's some people that housing is really important to them, and that is where they want to splurge. And I think that's fine. And to your point, Lauren, that's where we have to give ourselves permission to spend on those things. Of course, we have to be careful here and can't splurge on every area, because we do need to provide for our future selves. But it's about taking a step back, saying, what is actually important to me? What actually increases my daily happiness? And then carving that out within your plan to say, here's where I'm going to spend more. Here's an area that's not that important to me, and I'll spend less here. And that's where I'm going to get my savings for the future. But it's all about a balance. And of course, you can run these numbers and figure out what you can afford to do. And it's about understanding what increases your daily happiness as well, what brings you joy in the moment, and giving yourself permission to spend on those things.
And I think revisiting that as well, this idea that I really like red wine, it makes me happy now. I'm happy house hacking, which means I own a home and I also have rentals on the same property. I'm very fine with our 4Runner and our Honda Accord right now, but some of that may change. So I think it's also this idea that you need to be revisiting and making sure that what you thought was important to you is still important to you. Because I think you, if you don't do that, you can end up feeling kind of hollow over time.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say, look, 5 years ago, I didn't really care about a nice car, but now I do. And now I'm making way more money. And I'm going to stop taking pride in like driving my Toyota Corolla around. And I'm going to buy a car that I really want. It's fine to make those changes. And just making sure that you're not making any of these decisions from a place of feeling shame. Like in our community, there can be a lot of shame around ways that people spend their money. And a lot of us can feel like guilty for spending our money in a certain way, which I think is ridiculous because we all have different levels of income. We all have different things that we value. And so it's really about being careful about the external opinions that you take in. And first and foremost, making sure that you are prioritizing what's important to you and not considering what's important to everybody else. Somebody else might think you wanting a nicer car is dumb, but I really don't care, you know, about their opinion if it's what's important to me. And so you do have to block out those outside voices when you're sitting down and trying to figure out what matters to me.
I've definitely caught myself judging others at times. How I now feel is I still think maybe a $1,300 truck payment or something like that isn't the way to go. However, if you recognize what you're not able to spend on because of that, if you're not saving in your 401k, you're not maxing it out, or you're not contributing to your Roth, or you're not saving for your future, I just want you to know that part of the reason you're not doing that is because you have a $1,300 truck payment. Mm-hmm. If you want to look me in the eye and tell me that the truck is more important than your retirement, cool. Like, I guess I'm okay with that. But I definitely have been guilty of some of that judgment in the past. And I really try to check myself now.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because we're talking to a lot of different people here, and to somebody who's making like $60,000, a $1,300 car payment really probably is stopping you from financial freedom and saving for future you. If you're making seven figures in a year, I mean, then you're actually doing really well. That's yeah. below your means. So it's hard to say these rules of thumb as a fixed dollar amount when it really, it's relative. And I think that's the issue we get into a lot. And I agree. I mean, most people have the problem of spending too much, you know, not that they're not spending enough or not that they're being too frugal. So when we talk to these people and we're saying, hey, $1,000 car payment, like, do you really need that? That is what most people need to hear, is that you're giving up a little bit of financial freedom to do that. And to be honest, I kind of doubt that it's really enhancing your daily quality of life. I think there's a very small percentage of people who get excitement every single day about the car that they drive. Because I know at a certain point, we all get used to our surroundings. We get used to the car we drive. We get used to the house we live in, and it's not exciting anymore. And so if there is pushback from the finance community, it is a kind of, for me, that's where it comes from, that maybe the car is really important to you, but the vast majority of people, it probably isn't. And we do have a huge problem with us spending too much on cars. I know that the $1,000 car payment just hit like a record high recently. And so that's where a lot of personal finance bloggers and people are coming out to say, hey, let's rethink this decision. And my guess is when we say things like that, that is what the most people need to hear.
That's $12,000 a year Let's say you pay some taxes before that. Like, that means that you're making at least $15,000 a year just to drive your vehicle. Mm-hmm. And how long is that payment? How many years is it? Do you ever pay it off? Probably not. You probably just go right into another one. So that's a good point. So we talked about balance in terms of delayed gratification with money, right? Like, let's spend some money now, maybe save a little less so that we can live. But I also wanted to talk about like hustling and working hard, because there's that side of it too. And I've been really mulling this general idea around in my head lately, where like back in say the 50s-ish, there was like one job in the household. And then the women went to work, say. So like a lot of households have two jobs. And then the world kind of stabilized and that became the norm. And now we're heading down the like, all right, we also need a side hustle. But like, do we both need side hustles? And then we've got four jobs. Like, where does this end? So I was wondering if you could talk about like, it's not just delayed gratification in terms of money. Like, you need to also have time to enjoy your life now.
Yeah, that is so true. I actually was at dinner last night talking about this, because I was at dinner with somebody. He's 100 years old. And he's talking about how, you know, jobs just don't provide what they used to. He has a pension, you know, he has all these things. And I was saying, yeah, I mean, it used to be you could survive on one income coming into the household. You could buy your starter home. You could live comfortably. It doesn't feel like that's the case anymore. And I mean, I think we're seeing that it's really not the case anymore, especially with home prices now. And to your point, yeah, we have to have at least a dual income. And now we're even shifting more into side hustles and things like that. And the dual income is getting to a point where it's not enough. And it's this question of, okay, how much of it is rising prices? Things are really expensive, student loans, you know, things like that. And how much of it is just our own internal pressure or external pressure that we need to be doing these things? And you brought up time. And I think that's what we really have to think about. There's your job, there's money, but time is everybody's most valuable resource. And I think when we're making decisions, if you're not considering your time in it and how you want to spend your life, then you're not really making a fully informed decision. So it's difficult, because I do believe in self-employment and being an entrepreneur, and it does take hustle, especially for a few years. But I think the idea that everyone needs to have a side hustle now, if it's not something that aligns with you, if it's not something that you really care about, then I think that's kind of a dangerous external pressure that you might fall into, especially because for many of us, more work probably won't make us happier. It's more time we should spend with our family, more time we should spend with our friends, more sense of community. Those are actually what's proven to make us happier. And I think we're letting that stuff go in place for work. And we could talk about the American influence of this. We are, as Americans, many of us are really hard workers and hustlers, and it's kind of built into our identities. And I think we do have to pause sometimes and say, is this what I actually want? Is this actually increasing my daily quality of life? Or is there some external pressure that is making me feel like I have to do this when I don't really want to?
How do we filter externally what we're taking in?
Yeah, I think there's questions that you can ask yourself, and it's a kind of a sense of awareness. And so when I work with clients, I ask them questions like, what does your ideal day look like? What is something that you don't have now, but you want? Or what are things that you have now that you enjoy and would like to do more of? And I don't think we take much time to reflect on, you know, how check in with ourselves and say, am I enjoying my daily life? And what does my ideal day look like? And when you sit down to ask yourself some of these questions, you know, what's important to me? What do I want to spend more time doing? When do I feel the most present? When am I having those feelings of joy and happiness, and where time is just passing and I wish I could just stay in that moment? If we pause to ask ourselves those questions, then I think it brings a sense of awareness to ourselves. And then after asking those questions, as we go through our days, I think that helps increase the awareness now. And maybe if you're spending, if you're leaving your 9 to 5 and you're going to do to work afterwards, maybe you realize that this isn't actually what's making you happy. And if you don't need to do it financially, then maybe that's not where your time is best spent.
The renewable resources, money, not time. Mm-hmm. That 100-year-old, I feel pretty confident there's no 100-year-olds listening to this Adulting is Easy podcast. If you are, please totally hit me up on Twitter or email. But I feel pretty confident that 100-year-old would switch with pretty much anybody listening to this, despite whatever their financial position is, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very simple question. I think the way that I've seen it is, would you switch places with Warren Buffett today if you could? And almost nobody would say yes.
Right? I don't want to be 90. No way. Even if I'm a 100 billionaire.
Exactly. No one is willing to give up their time for money. So why are we doing that today? So much of us, and many of us, and I have a really strong opinion about this because I did it myself. I have anxiety around money, and I have for a long time, really chased a higher and higher income and higher net worth, and fully believed that that was where happiness or sense of security was. If it was just that income I needed to hit or that net worth I needed to hit. But yeah, I mean, to your point, it was not valuing my time. I was exchanging so much time for more money. When, if I can picture myself, you know, being older and looking back at this time, I'm sure I'm going to have wished that I spent more time with friends, family, and doing other things rather than just chasing another dollar amount.
That's what really got me to leave my job this year in 2023 was both my grandmas are still alive. My niece and nephew are like babies. They're 1 and 3. You know, my sister's still in college. And so I'm able to spend time with all of these people. And my mom was lucky enough that she was a stay-at-home mom my whole life. And so I can like hang out with her and I can just spend time with all of these people that are not on the 9-to-5 schedule. And I've been missing things with them. So even though, you know, I'm 34, I finally did pull that trigger this year because I had that realization. So I think I will wrap with this question. It's the end of the year. It's the end of 2023. Do you put any weight on this time of year in terms of reflection and goals and things like that?
So the way that I do goals, I actually do them quarterly. It doesn't, and I do reflect back at the year and think about what went right, what went wrong. I am a big goal setter, so I do. And I try to create kind of a theme or a plan for the coming year. But I do think it can be really overwhelming to look at the year as a whole and say, this is the year that I start this job and hit that job start or hit 6 figures in income or start the side hustle. And I think it's maybe you have an idea of where you want to be in 5 years and you just start to backtrack and bring it to the present day. And say, okay, what do I need to do over the next 90 days? To help move the needle and get there. So every beginning of the quarter is like a reset to where I reflect on the past quarter. I see if I hit the goals, if I didn't, what happened. And then I do create goals for the coming quarter. So it's an important time for me. I know some people think it's dumb to set New Year's goals. But it's been a practice that I've done for a few years now that has worked really well to think about goals in these 90-day sprints.
That's interesting. I like that. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Rachel, before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say, just as kind of a summary, when it comes to chasing financial freedom and giving up some of our time today to do it, I do think there is a balance. And the answer is never in the extremes. It's never, I'm going to be extremely frugal and get to financial freedom as soon as I possibly can. And it's also never, I'm going to spend everything today, not even think about future me and all the issues that will bring up by not taking care of myself financially. It's in the middle. It's taking care of present day you, making sure you're enjoying today while also taking care of future you. And both are important. And it's probably going to be a work in progress for you to find that balance. But it's important to continue to ask yourself questions and to be aware to make sure that you're taking care of both people, present you and future you.
I love that. When I was younger, I always thought, okay, I'm 22, but I'm also working for 62-year-old Lauren. Little did I know I was working for 32 or 42-year-old Lauren, but that's definitely the idea. Future you is you. And some people forget that. Can you let people know how to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm most active on Twitter, camp_wealth. I am on Instagram now at Camp Wealth. My website is Rachel Camp Wealth. And I have a newsletter that you can find my website too.
And that's Rachel, R-A-C-H-A-E-L. I forgot the A when I wrote to you. You can follow me on Twitter at Adulting is Easy, or X. Instagram at Adulting is Easy Real. Also YouTube. This will be available there at Adulting is Easy. If you like this episode, you also like episode 77, I think, Fire in Your 20s. And that is one of the extreme cases. So interested to see what you all think of that after you listen to this one. If you haven't already, thanks for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Rachel and I have made adulting a little easier for you.